Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me today. I believe today is April the 20th. It is officially Easter. So happy Easter, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful celebration with your family. And if you're not with your family, I hope you have a wonderful Sunday to yourself. Today's episode is going to be devoted to tools of divination. I wanted to talk about this given that trying to discern which tools to use in terms of your own personal development can be really tricky. And it's definitely an exploration and a journey within itself. I want to talk a little bit about my path that I took and the decisions that I kind of made doing this. However, let me preface this. I really am not familiar with all the tools of divination. I know of them, you know, because of reading books and from working with other talented psychics and clairvoyants. However, I truthfully have not tried every single tool, and I'm sure there are more that I have never even heard of. So today I'm going to stick with what I know, and then I think there are a couple of other tools that really warrant their own complete podcast episode, since there's so much material on them and they have a long history with use from psychics. So just to kind of talk to you a little bit about the path that I took. Everyone's path is very different, so don't think that you need to take the same steps that I did. A tool is going to speak to you specifically, and you'll know it when you work with it. So let's talk about some of the tools that you can use if you're just beginning to kind of explore your abilities or if you want to tap into your intuition. Now, at the beginning, as most of you know, I was really not into using any medium in which to communicate with spirit. I already had the ability to hear, and I felt like that was totally sufficient. However, there were a couple of things that I was gravitating towards, and I had been taking a lot of classes. I took tarot classes, I took classes in mediumship, I took meditation classes, and I was trying other little things on my own at home just to explore and get my feet wet, if you will. And I will say at the beginning, I was extremely nervous because if you are, you know, if you do come from a background of a religious background where these, you know, tools are of the devil, then you're not going to want to look at them, let alone touch them. And so I was very, very hesitant to even do this. I was scared out of my mind because, as I told you guys before, you know, growing up, I could hear spirits talk, and I always thought they were negative spirits, and some of them were, but I just couldn't imagine kind of tapping into what I thought, you know, composed the dark arts. Therefore, I just was scared out of my mind to do it. However, given that I had taken many risks and communicated with other spirits at this point or at that point, and had been having a number of very revelatory dreams and kept going with it, I just, decided to take a few more risks because at that point I thought, what the hell? Why not? You know, yes, I'd had a lot of experiences with spirits. At the moment, I decided to kind of dive into oracle cards and the tarot. I was really concerned more so about the tarot because we all know it has a very bad rap in terms of being a very specific tool to communicate with, you know, Satan himself. And I definitely did believe that. And I know a lot of people, because I have a lot of friends who are very devout, they still kind of believe that. And I do respect that belief. However, after working with it for for many years now, I definitely do not have that belief. You know, I was listening, I was listening to this interview with Rosemary Guiley. She's written a lot of historical books on angels, like a lot of encyclopedias on angels, Black Mirror Scrying, which I'm going to talk about today. And she said something really profound. And she said, the more you have your energy in the tool that you're using, it will respond even stronger to you. And I think that that's super true. That's something that I have really, really learned. So before we jump into that, let me just say the first tool that I tried was the tarot, believe it or not. I did tell a story, many episodes back, where when I was in high school, a friend of mine and her mom took me to this New Age store, and I walked out of there with angel cards. At the time, they were, they weren't angel cards. They were actually the fairy cards. And I remember playing with it, and they were so accurate. It scared me. And at that point in my life, you know, I was still going to church a lot, and I ended up throwing the deck away. And it's funny that I bought it many years later. So that was really like my first kind of, I guess you could say, experience with Oracle cards. But then I didn't touch them for years after that. But then I did buy a tarot deck many years ago. And it's kind of funny because it seems like Oracle cards and the tarot deck specifically has been kind of coming in and out of my life for quite some time. However, once I had established my relationship with my spirit guides and the archangels and the angels, I felt more comfortable with the tarot. And I remember asking my spirit guide specifically, you know, is this safe to use? Because I had heard so many things growing up. And of course, you watch in a lot of movies, you know, all of these very witches, if you will, who use this, you know, satanic device to communicate, and it's the tarot deck. So I too had that nasty stereotype. So I asked my guide, I was like, look, is this something I can use? And he said, yes, but you must always have good intentions with using it as you would any other tool. I've never forgotten that. So whenever I use any tools, and it's funny because usually, not always, but usually when you're working with any divination tools, you want an answer to a problem, right? You're looking for a solution, which means you're not in the best headspace or heart space. And I've always been told, again, by my guide, you know, you need to be pretty much in a good space when you're doing this. And I have found that to be pretty profoundly true for the most part. So, as I said before, I will tell you a little bit about my experience with the tarot. I'm not going to give you this huge history of the tarot, because I feel like that is its own like 10-part episode. But I will tell you a little bit about how I kind of began to use it, and the relationship I've kind of built with the tarot, and the crazy experiences I've had with it. So realizing that I have a lot of stories just with the tarot itself, I hope I can get to all of the other tools. If not, I'll definitely do a part two next time. So it's kind of funny. Before I accepted what I had the ability to do, I don't remember how or when exactly I decided to order a tarot deck, but I did. This was like 9 years ago. And I wasn't practicing meditation at this point. I kept hearing spirits at night, and I was still in the stages of being extremely scared. I felt like I was being terrorized. But I remember I bought a deck because at the time I had gone out on a date with some guy, and I made a bad decision about something, and I remember asking about him over and over, stupidly, with the deck, and I kept getting the same answer. So I know I started with the tarot a lot sooner than I even thought. So when I really began to use the tarot, and when I was in communication with my guide, again, he told me to have very good intentions. I was really fascinated just by all of the symbolic imagery. And by the way, I know there are millions now of tarot types. I stick with the Rider-Waite. That's my go-to, and it has been. So I've had my deck for many years. Thus, the relationship I have with my deck, I feel like, is really strong. And when I say that, I can actually feel the energy of the deck itself when I'm using it. So if it's within the same vicinity, like if it's in my bedroom and it's sitting on my nightstand, I can feel it and I have to put it away. It's kind of weird because I've always wondered, is it my energy that's on the cards? Is that what I can feel? Or is it the energy of the tarot themselves? Now, I know a lot of people are probably thinking they're just, you know, plastic. They have nothing. But I do think we are creators, and we do put our energy into our own creations, right? So I think it's almost a combination of your energy plus the energy of the deck. So when I first started to work with the tarot, I did read a lot about it. And I was a little nervous. And I remember my teacher told me, you know, start with meditating with each card every day. Write down what you see, try to build a relationship with them. And I totally will never, ever forget when I started to meditate with the deck, because it was so real that it almost scared me. And at that point, I was very much so just getting my feet wet with tools, and the tarot was the first thing that I used. So I remember when I meditated with the magician, and I closed my eyes and I held the card, and it was as if I was with the magician. It was so real. And he had four doors for me. I'll never forget it. And he told me to pick a door. And I was like, okay. And I walked up to one of the four doors and I opened it, and a bunch of pentacles came rolling out, and they were huge. And I couldn't believe it. It was almost like magic, for lack of a better word. So I started to do this. And the coolest experience that I had with the tarot, and I was just taking it one by one, by the way. I didn't read like a bunch of manuals. I kind of wanted to, you know, get my own take on it. And I'll never forget when certain cards, it was as if I was stepping into a card, would introduce me to other cards I had yet to see. It was so amazing to have that experience, because they would literally, I'll never forget, I can't remember which card it was, but it was like a boat docking, and they took me to meet the person who was coming off of this boat, and it was the Queen of Wands, and I had yet to even like touch, you know, the wands at all, and it was so real. So I started to build my relationship with the tarot that way. And then I remember I was told at the time also, don't only meditate, you know, and write down your experiences, but also sleep with that card under your pillow. Not the full deck, just that card. So I did that, and I put one of the cards, and it was probably the magician, underneath my pillow. Now here's what happened with that. Some people have nightmares, and I don't know why. I had a dream, and in that dream, I was in, God, it felt like it was an old Victorian house, which is what we were currently living in, by the way, at the time, and I was in this room, and the room was filled with, it was like, there was a bunch of cherry, like wood, just all in the room. I remember that, and there was a table. It was a round table, and there was a figure, okay? He was standing across the room. And it was like he was in a black cloak. And I was standing across the room. And in between the both of us, there was this round cherry wood table. And I started walking slowly. It was so slow. And I had my hands, you know, kind of like behind my back as I was kind of lollygagging to get to this table. And so I approached it. And lo and behold, on this table was the entire tarot spread out, and it was in a circle, literally the whole deck from start to finish. And I remember I just peered at it. I just kind of reached over or bent over the table and stared at the deck. And all of a sudden, when I looked up, that figure was standing right there. Again, he was in a black cloak, and I could barely see his eyes, and I was scared. When I looked at him, I was terrified, and he pretty much told me, but telepathically, that he wanted to be my teacher. And when I asked him his name, I woke up because I recognized the name, and it scared the crap out of me. And it was Aleister Crowley. Now, I'm not going to go on about him. Actually, I will devote an entirely separate episode about magic and Aleister Crowley. But I remember waking up, and I know that from what I have read about him, that he had very dark intentions. And so I was very honest and said, absolutely not. And that's something I imagine some of you might experience. Teachers will come to teach you how to use certain tools. However, you must use your intuition. When something feels off or something doesn't feel right, or if you're asked to do something that you don't feel comfortable with, then say no and they'll leave. And that's what happened. However, I swear he came back one more time, to be honest. And I was very, you know, I was pretty honest at that time too, saying absolutely my intentions are different. And I never saw him again. So it was definitely an experience, but it made me very, very nervous to use the tarot. However, slowly I did build a relationship with it. I studied it, and then I took classes with teachers. And the more I used it, I feel like the energy of the deck has just gotten so strong that it is quite interesting for me to use. I have a deck that is my own, and I have read people with it, but I find that, I don't know if any of you guys have this experience, that when you try to read for someone, your cards will fly out, and it's really still a message just for you. That happens to me all the time, so I've always thought about getting a separate deck for other people. But anyway, let's move on from the tarot, because there's so much I could talk about with that. But from the tarot, I switched into using oracle cards, and now I know everyone knows about oracle cards. Oh my God, there are so many decks. It's amazing and fun. I'm not attracted to all of them. Obviously, you have to pick your own tool, but I loved them. And of course, like most of you, I was very much so attracted to Doreen Virtue's angel decks. Now, I know that she has since condemned everything in the New Age, which is her own prerogative. However, the messages and the power behind oracles are, you know, did not disappear because she's had a change of heart. So I would say when I first started using tools of divination, again, from the tarot, I switched also to oracle cards, and I was using both of them. And the messages were just so accurate, again, scarily accurate. And whenever I started to use the tarot and, you know, the oracle cards just to give readings for myself at the beginning, I could definitely feel a presence. And I didn't know at the time if it was my guide, if it was the angels, if it was other spirits, what was going on. But I quickly learned that, you know, your guides will accompany you and help you with giving readings and with understanding and assessing the message. I did use, and as you guys know, I still use angel oracle card decks. I love them. I do think that obviously there are so many decks. Choose what resonates with you. Don't just get something because everybody else is using it. I usually just keep the decks that I've had. I do buy new decks every once in a while, but I'm very picky. And also, I've talked about this before, I think on YouTube many times, but when you pick an oracle card deck, again, use your intuition, because when you start to use that deck, you're calling that energy into your space, which means, for example, if you start to use an Archangel Michael oracle deck, he's going to be there with you quite a bit now. So you're allowing that energy of whatever it is now to be in your just into your aura, into your space, and work with you. Whatever it is, it will come. And I will say one way that I know that is because when I started to use this dragon deck, which I really like, I started to dream. And whenever I would meditate, there were all these dragons around me. And it was nothing negative. It was just they were there to help me. And it's funny because, you know, my friends in this community don't necessarily always know what I do in my private life, right? And I'm not always just going around giving readings. However, I had a few friends and I was practicing. They just kept telling me, there are so many dragons in your aura. We don't know why. And I knew why they were there. So be very aware of the type of energy you choose to pick. And whatever oracle deck you use, just know that you're pretty much saying, you know, please come work with me and help me. So have that awareness. Okay, what else do I want to say about oracle cards? You know, there's really no, I say there's no wrong way to use them. A lot of them have very helpful messages. Again, pick a deck that resonates with you. For some of you who are clairsentient, when you go into a metaphysical store, you usually can feel the energy of the oracle cards themselves. And some of them will be really strong for you. And those are the decks usually I would probably say, give them a chance and begin to work with them as well. All right. Moving away. Oh, wait, there's one thing I should say about oracle cards. Should you clear them with sage? I feel like my guide lately has been giving me really quick like messages like out of the corner of my eye. It's so weird. I feel like that's kind of shifting. And so if I keep stopping like that, it's because he's trying to help me out. Clearing your deck. This is interesting. Yes, I do feel like decks need to be cleared. And I will occasionally, which I'm looking at my sage right now, which I need to do, is clear my decks just with sage, just to keep the energy light and clear. Like I said, usually when we're reading ourselves or others, it's because, you know, not so good things are happening. And so that energy kind of, I feel like, gets or surrounds, you know, and fills the energy of the cards. So I think you should just sage them, clear them, and then put them away. All right. No more on Oracle cards. I'm sure everyone who's listening already uses them. And I feel like they are a phenomenal tool. And you know, this woman named Rebecca Campbell, God forgive me if I got this wrong. The Lightworkers Oracle card deck. Oh, I have to look at it. Anyway, it's kind of a new deck. The best message that she has in that deck, and if you open the box immediately on the inside, it says, you are the Oracle. And I think that that's the truth. That yes, this is your tool, but you and yourself are the receiver of the message. So you are the channel. And the messages is coming through to you. And I thought that that's probably the most profound thing in any of the Oracle decks I've ever seen. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about pendulums. Because I think this was like the third tool I decided to try. And I have to say, I think they're gorgeous because I like stones, but it's not my jam. And I have accepted that. So when I was, again, starting out, in case some of you guys are not familiar with using a pendulum, it's usually like a weighted object, usually a terminated point crystal or stone, that's on the very, it's on the end of, let's say, some people put it on a piece of string, some people put it on like a metal chain, and the pendulum itself can provide you answers, like yes or no answers, right? Pretty much, I think that's it. And when you're asking it questions, obviously you have to clear it. You have to ask it to show you which direction for yes, which direction for no, and then that's the way you operate with it. How do you get, or who's on the other end? Who are you speaking to? I think you have to be really clear in terms of who you're talking to. So when you're using a pendulum, first I would say sage the hell out of it, and then sage it again, and then again. And sage your space and clear your space, and then call in your guides and angels for protection. I don't know why I always get that impression with pendulums, but I do that if I decide to use them, which is rare. However, in a class that I took, side story, we were taught to use pendulums, and I remember there was this girl who's pendulum moved so fast, it scared me. I've never seen anything like that. She would ask a question and before she could even, boom, get it out, it was swinging so fast. Mine was like so slow. I felt like my guides were like, I don't feel like answering this question. But I'll never forget watching her because I thought, God, that's really cool. That's really her tool. So when you know, you know. Anyway, back to pendulum. So yes, you can ask for it to be your spirit guide to be on the other end of answering the question. You can ask that it be your angels, Archangel Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, whoever you are working with, goddess, I don't know, right? And just be very clear in terms of who you want to speak to, all right? And then after you have discerned which way is yes and which way is no, you can begin to have that conversation with them. Pendulums are also used to let you know what's going on with your chakras. I'm sure most of you have had this experience where you're laying down and you want to know if your chakras are open, closed, etc., spinning in the right direction. You can actually use a pendulum and, I would highly advise you have a friend kind of stand over you and hold the pendulum over the chakra and then ask if it's open or closed, etc. And you can kind of see how the pendulum will swing. I feel like that's the best way of using your pendulum, to be honest. And I would love to do that soon. however, it's like I said, it's not really my tool, but I will use it to check my chakras to see how they're doing. Okay, so let's move on to another cool tool. You're not going to find this in too many books. And I've kind of thought about writing about it because I have watched people do this. However, I don't think this is my jam either. scrying. We all know about crystal gazing. We all know about using, you know, fortune tellers using a crystal ball to see, right? So really it's their clairvoyance and the crystal themselves is allowing them to see present / future events. It's, you know, there's a part of me that's still a little skeptical kind of about it because I've never done that, even though I have been told by many people that I should really try because it would be useful for me. Number one, crystal balls are really expensive and I have yet to manifest that. But like I said, it's never really been a focus for me, so I haven't put my energy into it. However, I know for certain people, it really works. There's something about the crystal itself and the spherical shape that helps to amplify the energy. And if you remember me talking about shapes of crystals and stones in the previous episode, I talked about how the spherical shape where the energy energy kind of expands like through all ends, which means you're allowed to see past, present, and future. And I think for those who can use crystal balls, they have a very strong clairvoyant ability, but also they have a strong ability to tap into your own personal records, which is amazing. Once I try this, I will come back and let you guys know how this went. But I'm also not someone to try something just once and then give up. So I'll give it a solid like 6 month effort and report back on a later episode. All right. So there are all types of scrying. It's not just with a crystal ball. There's water scrying, which is something I really wanted to talk about because that was kind of new to me a year ago. And I'd never heard of it until I kept getting messages that I needed to work with water. And I have to be honest, when I start hearing new random things like this, I feel like it's BS. I can't even lie because I've never heard about it. And, you know, I've never read anything about it. Most psychics that I have studied just have a natural ability to hear or see. Thus, they don't really use tools. And I didn't know about water scrying. Fun fact. So in order to do water scrying, you need preferably a black bowl. And then you just put water in it. Now, for those of you whose clairvoyant ability is developed, this will be an easier task. For those of you who haven't really practiced that much, I would say practice first before you begin to try water scrying. But for some people, I've seen that they get a black bowl, and then they have water. They fill it with water, and then they stir the water, and then they stare into the bowl, and they're able to see events. I think that's so awesome. Some people don't even need to stir the water. They can just see. There's something about the element of water that allows you to tap into your clairvoyant ability to see what's happening, to have visions. I was told I needed to do this. And, you know, I'm actually a very disciplined person. That was my guide always told me. He was like, "You're so disciplined. That's like your best attribute." I was like, "Thanks." But I've never tried it. So again, I'm going to give this like a solid 6 month effort to see if anything changed. But here's the fun fact with water scrying. Our favorite psychic, Nostradamus, actually practiced water scrying. I did not know that. I think that's really awesome. And all of his revelations, if you will, all of his prophecies for the future came because he was using water to scry, to see the events, to get his quatrains, his messages about what's going to happen at the end of the world, if you will, right? Things that he saw. I did not know that. I think that's very cool. That's one method that he used. Apparently, he used two methods. I'm going to tell you about the second one shortly. So if you're interested, you guys, in trying new methods, I do recommend if you've developed your clairvoyance or if you've known, you've always had the ability to see, practice water scrying. Give it like a good 6 months, like every other day, 6 months straight, and see if it works for you. You'll know if it does or if it doesn't. Okay, so let's move on. Since we're already on scrying, I wanted to talk about Black Mirror scrying. Let me say this right now. I have never done this. There's somebody in my family, very close to me, who does this, and they're very brave, and it works profoundly, they have said. And I have talked to many people who say this works so well. I think I am a scaredy cat. I have to be honest. I think I know it would really work well. That's why I'm not ready to go there yet. But I think 2020, Dina can go there. So again, I have a lot to report back after going through all of these different methods. So let's talk about black mirrors. Very old practice, very, very old practice. If you're familiar with Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, the first one, her, I don't know if you want to call him clairvoyant, I don't know if you want to call him magician, psychic, whatever title, but John Dee, who is known to be her personal, I guess you could say, psychic in the English court, did black mirror scrying. I thought that was really cool. He also did, he practiced a lot of other arts as well, but he was known for looking into a black mirror to try to get messages in general, to try to communicate with the angels and archangels, and to get messages, of course, for the queen herself. So I thought that was pretty, pretty interesting. So black mirrors, from what I have read, are there to show you a lot of things, okay? When you first start working with a black mirror, I feel like it can be scary. But then again, there, for some of you, it might not be. It might be so natural that you just gravitate towards using that tool. It is said that when you are working with a black mirror, that you will see your past lives. Like, you will literally see your face change. I have heard this from many people, and I'm not ready to see my face change. However, I was told, in terms of methodology, that you would sit in a dark room, or at least sit in your room, sitting right in front of the mirror, and then only have one candle. And the candle should be like a regular pillar candle, if you will, to light the room. And then you stare into the black mirror, and then you'll start to see things. Do you ask it questions? Possibly. I'm not really sure. Or are you just automatically shown things? Possibly. It really depends on, I think, what it is you are trying to do. Sometimes, like I said, your features can change. And sometimes a teacher is going to appear. And again, don't forget to be very discerning when a teacher does appear, because there are all types of teachers here in the universe. Okay. Another side fun fact, Nostradamus was said to gaze into a dark, shiny surface to get answers to his questions as well. So he was kind of known to water scry and to do some black mirror scrying, which I also think is pretty cool stuff. I always was under the impression that he just had dreams and visions, because I remember when I was 16 watching this movie about Nostradamus, because I was always interested. And I swear in that movie they never even showed water scrying or black mirror scrying. It was just that he kept having these visions and these dreams that, you know, was showing him all this stuff. All right. So I Rosemary Guiley has this great book on black mirror scrying, and she talks about the history and she talks about how to use it. And I even think she has some footnotes in there showing you, or pinpointing you towards where to buy a good black mirror. So if you're really, if that's your jam, go for it. I do think a lot of discernment is important. I also think a lot of protection is important. And I think that you need to have a cloth over the mirror. I probably wouldn't keep it in my bedroom. It would have to be in a separate area of the house. There's something else I wanted to say. So with mirrors in general, a lot of people hate having mirrors in their rooms, or those sliding glass doors that are mirrors. I've always felt that way too. I don't know why. Maybe it was all the horror films I watched growing up. But let me just say this. I was told by my guide that just mirrors in general, like if I wanted to amplify my energy and my gifts, like while I'm practicing, to sit in front of a mirror. And it works. I cannot lie. It really, really, really works. I don't understand how and why that works, but it works. I actually don't do it that often either, because I, everybody has very different experiences when they're reading someone's energy, reading someone's records. Some people, everyone feels energy different. That's all I can say. And for me, if I'm in front of a mirror and trying to read you, if you already have very strong energy and I'm using this mirror, I feel like my head's going to explode. Therefore, I don't do it. However, for myself, just during meditation, I know that just a regular mirror will help. So again, you can practice and see what happens. Okay. So let's talk about Ouija boards. Interesting stuff. Only tried it once when I was like 17. Tried it for a quarter of a second. never tried again. Never will. Yes, horrible stereotype, and I don't care. That's just my experience, and I'm sticking to it. I don't care. Judge me. This is just the way I am. So when I was 17, a friend of mine, oh God, I have another story to share. I'll have to like write this down for next time. Okay, dreams. Awesome. My friend and I was at her house, my best friend at the time. I went to her house and we were like chilling and talking, and she said, "Hey, I have something." And I said, "Okay." You know, at this point, you know, I told you I was still pretty Christian, you know, going to church and stuff. And she pulled out this Ouija board, and I looked at her, and she was a hardcore atheist. And I said, "Absolutely not. There's no way." And she said, "Come on, nothing's going to happen. Come on, let's just try." And I said, "Fine." And I don't know if it was just the peer pressure between the, you know, even though there were only two of us, but we pulled out the Ouija board, and neither of us put our hands on the little cursor at the planchette, but I stared at the Ouija board. And I swear to God, I saw a face, and it was very dark. And I looked at her, and she was scared. I didn't even say anything. And she looked back at me, and we closed it, and we put it away. And I think she actually threw it away the next day. I am not saying that Ouija boards should have a bad rap, because, again, it depends on your intentions. But I will say that day or that evening that we did that, the face that I saw, I'll never forget. And I don't know if it was just mischievous or what. I just never have touched them since, and I'm not doing it, you know. It's just not for me. But for other people, it really, really works. So it's kind of, Ouija boards are kind of interesting. I have read that the man who patented the board said Ouija means, or Ouija, if you will, means, it's like an ancient Greek word meaning good luck. That's kind of weird. Don't know if that's true, but I did read that. So I think Ouija boards kind of came out of that huge spiritualist movement that was happening in the 19th century. I think it was like around the 1840s, 1850s, this huge spiritualist movement kind of erupted right before the Civil War. So you find stories about table tapping, a lot of seances that were occurring. I think these were all primarily on the East Coast of the U.S. You have the Fox Sisters. You have, I swear it's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle as well, who's I feel like it was his wife who was really interested in seances, et cetera. So you have this explosion of spiritualism proving, you know, there's life after death kind of erupting out of the woodworks after the Civil War. And even during the Civil War, it's still kind of really expanding because people want to, you know, get in touch with their loved ones that they can't find. Are they dead? If they are dead, want to know that they're okay, et cetera. So it's interesting, though, that these Ouija boards kind of came out of what were called talking boards. Okay, so they weren't patented until about 1890. But prior to that, there were these so-called talking boards that also had kind of a similar design. They were boards. They had numbers on them. They had alphabets. There was a yes and a no on the board. There was a good evening and a good night on the board, which is really creepy, or good evening and or good night and good morning, excuse me. That was on the board. Creepy stuff. I'm not feeling that. Maybe you are. And I think I swear to God, these talking boards really huge in Ohio in the 1880s. And the guys who ended up patenting the boards in 1890 got the idea from these so-called talking boards that allowed people to communicate with the dead. So it's kind of cool stuff the way they've emerged into society. As we all know, they have the nastiest stereotype, and we see them in every single horror film. I don't know. I'm not an advocate for the Ouija board, but I will say, quick side story, my sister and I, I actually couldn't even tell you if my sister has tried one. I really don't know. However, she had a dream, 8 months ago, she called me. And I always know when she calls me either early in the morning or really late at night, I'm like, oh God. And I don't want to answer the phone because I know she's either seen a ghost, someone's talking to her, or she's had like a horrific nightmare or something crazy, something so scary that I won't sleep for a week. She actually called me. I feel like it was, I don't know if it was early in the morning. No, it was early in the morning because she said, hey, are you awake? And I was like, I guess I'm going to have to be awake. And she said, oh, I had this really crazy dream. You know, I had this dream that we were hiding. You were at my house, and my boyfriend was asking why we were hiding things. And we were actually hiding our spirit boards under the bed. I have never heard of Ouija boards referred to as spirit boards, but lo and behold, they are. How bizarre. And she doesn't even use them, and neither do I. So sometimes I wonder about things like that. See, this is at the point where you wonder yourself, are they messages? Are they, you know, is it a message telling you, hey, you know, you should try it out? Or did we do this in a past life? Or what's the deal? I don't know. But apparently Ouija boards are also called spirit boards. News to me, I'm not using them. Some people, and I totally believe also Rosemary Guiley, when I was watching her interview, because I think she also writes about Ouija boards. She used them, and she knows a lot of people who have a great communication with their guides and loved ones with using Ouija boards, and there's nothing supernaturally demonic about it. So for some people, this is really their tool, which again, I have respect. And of course, the intellectual side of me is like, well, if you use what's the difference from using tarot and using, you know, Ouija boards? I think the difference is that something is moving an object without your permission, or with your permission, I guess. But there's something supernatural that's moving an object in front of you. That is a little bit scary for me. So again, these are just kind of speaking to my own individual fears. Okay, let's kind of move out of Ouija boards. I'm sure some of you are listening who probably use them, and I have mad respect. I will watch, but I will not partake. All right, let's move and talk a little bit about a couple of these other ones that I'm not really familiar with, but just want to give you a heads up that they're out there, and if they sound interesting, you should give it a try. So let's talk about tea leaves. I feel like tea leaves are so cool. I don't think, you know, the practice is in vogue, but it has been on my mind for a few years to have a tea leaf reading and then maybe practice it myself. Apparently, it's not extremely complicated, but with any other tool, you know, it needs to resonate. So in terms of tea leaves, where did this whole practice kind of come from? My first assumption was that, you know, it came out of China, but not necessarily so. Apparently it was spread by a lot of, I guess you could say nomadic gypsies, and they were known to read the patterns in the tea cups, if you will, or in your cups after you've drinking your tea leaves. I didn't know that, but that's pretty cool. I've never had, a tea leaf reading. From my knowledge, again, if you're looking this up, I believe it's called tassiomancy, something like that, or to that effect, to read tea leaves. So from, again, my knowledge, the person who is receiving a tea leaf reading, which means reading the pattern of the residue of the leaves in the cup when you're finished drinking, a tea is made for them, and it has to be loose leaf tea. After you drink the tea, the reader will essentially read, and it's more complicated than this, but I'm giving you the very simplified version, especially because I don't read tea leaves myself. They read the pattern that's left in the cup. For some people, I think you have to like turn the cup upside down, or first stir and then turn the cup upside down and then turn it right side up. And then they read the patterns. So I didn't know that all kinds of patterns, shapes, could be left over inside the cup. A person, a heart, an animal, something, which I think is also really cool. So it is another means of kind of telling your fortune, your future, whatever. I feel like this needs to come back into style because I think this is a really cool way of giving a reading. Just so you know that tea leaves are not the only way of providing this type of reading. A lot of other readers utilize the same method, but with coffee grounds. So it's pretty common as well to have that reading. Again, I've never had that, but I feel like I would like to have it. So that's one method. If you can find somebody who can read tea leaves, that would be really cool to have that type of reading. Okay, let's move to the last thing I think I'll talk about today, palmistry. Dun, 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 dun. Everybody knows about getting your palms red. I've had mine red twice in my life. The second time I had 2 years ago, and it was awesome. The lady who gave me a reading, oh my gosh, she was so spot on. It almost creeped me out. And it's made me think about doing some research on reading palms, but it's going to have to like get in line with everything else. So I feel like I don't know that many of the metaphysical fairs that I've gone to lately have a lot of palm readers. I almost feel like it's becoming a bit of a lost art because most of us kind of just use cards for readings or have clairvoyance or clairaudience and give readings that way. However, I think there's a lot to be said in terms of looking at someone's hands. Obviously, you can tell, you know, depending upon the state of their hands, like someone's diet, you can talk about their health. But looking at their patterns, the lines, and discerning, you know, if they've kind of stuck to their blueprint that they had prior to their incarnation and seeing the differences in the paths that they took in their hands, I think it's really freaking cool. And I'm hoping that my sister will learn how to do this so she could read my palms. If she's listening, please put this on your list. If palmistry is interesting to you, go get your palms read first to see if it even resonates. It's a little bit more complicated than I thought because I have, when I had my palms read, the teacher had me, which I didn't know, you kind of have to cup your hands, both hands, and put them together, and then they're able to read that way. I always thought you just kind of needed your hands flat on a table, which is not really the case. I think that was what happened to me during my first experience. But I think there's a lot to be said in terms of, like I said, the decisions that you've made and the changes that you've made. Because if you look at both of your hands, the lines look different for the most part. And I have been told, and I am probably super incorrect, so feel free to correct me, that, and I swear it's your dominant hand, is, oh God, it's probably the opposite, but I'm just going to say it anyway, is that is the your blueprint, what you decided before you came, and then your other hand is showing you the actual decisions that you have made and the paths that you have taken. So, and it could be the opposite. So yes, you can correct me. I'm not always right. I think it's really fascinating to kind of look at that, to see how you've kind of deviated from what you intended to do. And it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's just interesting to see how being on this planet and being with and having this kind of like amnesia, if you will, how it's really had an effect in terms of the decisions that we've made and an impact. All right, there's so much that can be said about palmistry. Again, it has a bad rap as well. But I would recommend if you are interested in it, go find a really good palm reader who's been reading for at least 20 years. I think it might blow your mind. And also, a lot of practice is needed. Okay, everybody. I am actually going to go ahead and end today's podcast. There are a couple of other scrying techniques I think I can talk about next time. We can continue on other tools of divination. I hope that this has been remotely helpful. Like I said, there's so much that can be said about the tarot in itself. There's so much that can be said about, which I didn't touch on today on purpose, runes, which I think are really cool and have been very attractive to me for some time, but I just do not have the time right now. Tea leaves, palmistry, all kinds of scrying, and Ouija boards. I hope that this has been helpful today. Practice with some of these and see what you think. you'll obviously gravitate towards some of them. And if not, you are then considered to be in the camp of the purists who choose not to use any tool, and that's okay in itself. Some of us feel like we need that reassurance, or we just like to use them because they're a lot of fun. But if you just are a straight up channeler, stick with that. There's nothing wrong with that. All right, everyone, have a wonderful Easter and a wonderful week, and I will be talking to you guys again soon.